the Fantasy Six Pack Hour with your hosts, Joe Bob.
Ah, you're awful.
And AJ Applegar.
It's a mouthful.
Right, right. Welcome to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. My name is Joe Bond, founder of FantasySixPack.net. With me, as always, AJ Applegarth. How's it going, all man? I really hope you're not actually talking.
Damn it!
Oh god! I was like, you look like you're not actually faking it this time.
No,
of course.
No, I was not. That was
what happened in the 10 seconds or 30 seconds that I started the show. 10.
Okay. It's like 46. I was counting.
Okay.
And then I was like, wait, I need to unmute.
Okay.
That was about 16 seconds into me talking. So yeah. No, not much. I'm good. I was kind of making fun of you, but it's a moot point now. So
moving on. The moment is over. All right. So tonight we're going to be talking about some shortstops for the upcoming hopeful season. Yeah, we'll get into a little bit of that as well. And some TGFBI talk. So that'll be fun. But before we get going, just remind everybody, hit that subscribe button, that like button, follow button, whatever it is. Leave those comments and reviews on wherever you watch and listen. We appreciate it greatly. And man, I'm excited for I know we're, you know, a bunch of people are in these big industry leagues right now, but I am super excited right now. Next Monday is the start of the Fantasy Six Pack series, and we're starting it over on FanTracks. And look, man, there's no denying like why I chose FanTracks. All of the leagues I run are on FanTracks, and rightfully so, in my opinion. Like I love the platform. It's super deep with the player pool. Customizable any way you want, pretty much, and it's free. Like, you can't beat that. They have pay, like, some customization where you got to pay for, but I literally have never needed to use it. I've always figured out a way to not need to use it. It's usually like really super duper like minute rules where it's like, okay, I don't know, for whatever reason they charge for some of those, but I've never needed them in any of my leagues. There's like one rule where I was like, oh, I could potentially do that, and just been like, eh, I'm not going to worry about it. Like, it didn't matter. But I love the format. And honestly, if you guys have not played there before or you want to move your league over from the other guys, feel free to do it. I did it. Fantracks.com/fantasy6pack. It's worth it. I trust me, you will love the platform over there. I know, AJ, you play over there, right?
Yeah, don't feel free to do it. Just do it.
Right.
It's a much better experience overall. Like Joe said, the player pool is incredibly deep. And if you know of somebody that's not, for some reason, in their pool, you can email those guys at FanTracks, and they'll get back to you, you know, ASAP, and then put
same
the player
day.
In. It's like, yeah, okay, never mind, thanks.
Yeah.
I had that happen to me. Might have been last year, actually. There was someone that I really wanted to go after, and they just weren't there. And I'm like, oh man, what? Why is this person not here?
Probably like a dynasty league, right?
Yeah, it was. And yeah. I was like, okay. And I just, as soon as I sent my email, quick response, player, you know, they said, all right, well, this person will be in, you know, next day. Within 24 hours, the person was there.
Absolutely.
And I was able to claim them and get them. So I was really stoked about that. You know, lots of news and notes, lots of stats, you know, everything in there is just far and above beyond better than every other site out there in my mind. You know, CBS is a joke. It is an absolute joke for a fantasy platform. If anyone from
their pay for platform, I think is
okay.
Solid, but
we like you, please still listen.
I'm not gonna name names, but like I'll tell you the biggest reason why we moved over there initially a few years ago was the site we were playing on. We're in a keeper league. The site we were playing on didn't even launch their baseball fantasy leagues until the second week of March. And I'm going like, I can't plan keepers in a draft within 2 weeks of the season, guys. Like, we moved. I was like, we're moving. I'm not even voting. We have to move. I can't launch my the league. We needed to do stuff. So that's the other big thing is like they are open pretty much all year round. It is all year round. Really so it is pretty awesome. But let's get moving here and do our beer of the week.
Beer.
What you got, man?
All right. So I am finally cracking into this bad boy that I've been holding for probably too long. but it is a Belgian triple called Exemption. Ooh. From Taxman Brewing out in Indiana. My boy Nick got this for me.
Fits for the times, right?
Tax Man. It's the tax season, you know, Beatles song, Tax Man. So yeah, I'm you know, and they're British, so it's close to Belgium, I guess, right? Closer than we are. But yeah, cheers.
All right, so I'm drinking an Other Half Brewing. This is actually one of their anniversary beers. Apparently, fifth anniversary. I don't know. It says fifth anniversary is dead. Oh, I don't know what that means. But it's an Imperial IPA. It's actually 10%. It's I Love New York because they are a New York brewery, even though they opened up one here in D.C. So yeah.
They're I haven't tried it yet. Supposed to open one in Philly as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Or at least a distribution. I'm not sure if it's a full-on brewery, but
oh my god, that is legit. Whew, I might have to get that one like a 4.75. That is legit good.
If you get up and start singing, you know, some Jay-Z, what is it? Beyonce?
Frank Sinatra,
Alicia Keys. I don't remember.
I can just sing some Frank Sinatra. I Love New York. Yeah, that's right. Right.
It's actually called New York, New York. But sure, yes.
I know. You're an idiot. You know what I meant. Shut up. I wasn't saying the name of the song. I was saying anyway. We're gonna move on because you're an idiot. So coming on the show this week to help us out is none other than Matt Williams. He man, he's everywhere now. Big time writer for NBC Sports Edge. Just recently, The Athletic. Congrats on that one, big time. And of course, host of the Turn 2 podcast. What's up, Matt? How you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on the show to talk about sport that is currently not existing.
Right? I mean, we planned these, so we're just going to do them anyway. Because a season's going to happen, damn it.
we did it for 2020.
Yes, we did.
It seemed like at a complete lost cause. But, you know, we're not at a complete lost cause yet. We're nearing.
It'll be back.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, there's a doomsday scenario that's obviously possible, but with all the data that's out there as far as how many games the owners are willing to lose based upon, you know, April games having colder weather and a lot and lower attendance, they don't make a ton of money. And apparently after like 25 games, that's when they start to lose money for guaranteed TV revenue. So yeah, missing about a month is about as much leverage as the owners are willing to inflict on the players. After that, the owners lose money. So I would say likely scenarios May.
May is what I've heard.
If the players are going to hold on, they'll have to hold on to probably around then. So that's probably my best guess. It could happen beforehand. If for whatever reason the players don't cave, though, I mean, who knows? You know, because we all know. Most right-minded people are understand that, you know, some people like to argue the millionaires versus billionaires, but this is a matter of like, you know, revenues have skyrocketed.
It is.
The player's piece of the pie has not risen, you know, accordingly. So, you know, they do a lot of the top end guys. Do they need billions and millions of dollars? No, but this is like a fight for the people at the bottom as well. Unfortunately, it doesn't do minor leagues, because that's not what the players union does. As much as they probably would like to help them, it's just not a part of this. But yeah, hopefully we'll get something done. Yeah, we'll see. I'm thinking May 1st is maybe what we're looking at. Yeah.
I heard somebody today say May 15th, and I was like, man, that'd be a great happy birthday present to me. Yeah, I would be stoked for that.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that it's either not happening, it'll happen by then. There's no reason for it to happen, and then it happen after that date. If it's going to happen, it should happen by then. If it doesn't, it may not happen, period, which is unfortunate to even discuss, but I don't think it'll go that route.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest kicker for me on this is just, you know, looking at it from a fantasy perspective, and, you know, we're here trying to have the grind. Like, fantasy football is fun, but it's like it's a week to week thing, and most baseball that I've played in, at least, is daily. So you're always looking at it, and especially when it's dynasty. We were already talking about it with Fantrax, you know, promotion earlier. It's year round. Like, you have to be paying attention to your teams, and right now it's so hard to do it because there's so many free agents out there. There was so many people that moved, you know, early and signed these big contracts that, I mean, are they even getting them? Like, I don't even know. It's just so dumbfounding. But, you know, from an owner standpoint,
by the way, it's hilarious. Right.
Got my stapler, Dave. Where is it?
Huh? That's awesome.
Where's my GD Mai Tai? Gonna burn this place down.
Set the building on fire.
Nice.
Yes. Anyway, as I was saying, but you look back and 2020 was already a lost season in my mind, both financially and from a fan base standpoint. And, you know, last season came back. Yeah, we had fans eventually back in the stadiums and whatnot. And, you know, it was just another down year. I mean, are these billionaires really looking to continue
The Braves actually smacked? Still, there's something that came out, and maybe, I don't know, Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but something came out that the Braves actually made record revenue last year.
Yeah.
Like,
It's all in how the owners phrase this, because there's certain things where they don't actually have to count player salaries and stuff towards profit, and they can take certain things away where they can, on their books, it looks like they're not making money. In the grand scheme of things, people need to understand is, like, not every owner, I mean, all of them are billionaires. Not every owner is against the players. I mean, they all are. They want to keep as much as they can, but some of them are reasonable. I mean, it came out today that the final make it or break it offer that the owners offered on, was it Wednesday? Four owners were against it because they thought their final offer was way too generous. And they think if they went above it, eight owners would be firmly against it. So it'll be an uphill battle. There's a lot of money to be made in, like, the 14-team playoff, which would just be the worst thing in the world. Why are you putting half the teams in the playoffs?
But they at least came down to 12. So
came down to 12, but the owners apparently aren't willing to go take the CBT any higher, which is basically like the fake luxury tax. If that's going to go any higher, like the players want, the biggest bargaining chip the players have now is either waiting this out or caving to the 14-team playoff, because that's a lot of money to the
owners. The idea of this wasn't to jump into the specifics, but you brought up the CBT. Here's the thing. Here's my thing with the CBT. I actually kind of agree with the owners that the CBT shouldn't climb, because if you look at the stat that MLB Network put on TV over the last, like, 5 years, only like four teams each season, and there was a couple of seasons where like zero teams went over that threshold, and it's been 190, 195, 200 million, right? So these teams aren't spending the money anyway. They need to go after a minimum. Like, I don't know. Like, I know they don't want to do salary cap, but, like, go after a min and a max. Like, you got to do it. And that's how you're going to get player salaries all up around all entire baseball. But the problem is these top guys don't want to do that, because the top guys are getting the $500 million, 10-year, 13-year contracts, and they're the ones that want it higher.
They don't want to cap anything or dissuade teams from spending, because they just want everyone to spend money overall. I mean,
but they're not. That's the problem. Like, I'm sorry, I'm an O's fan. The O's are not spending money ever.
Well, that's the thing is, like, if that's such a contentious point, why bother fighting it on the ownership side? They're afraid of a couple of owners spending a lot of money, and in the end,
they're doing it anyway.
Yeah, not people. It's not going to not many people are going to spend that over that amount anyway. the owners are never going to go for a minimum because, like I said, it only takes a certain amount of ownership to take down ideas and to, you know, they need a certain majority and they're never getting it because the teams that don't want to have a minimum are the ones that are shooting this all down.
Of course.
So, I mean, the thing is, like, spending money doesn't guarantee you anything.
It doesn't.
Padre, they tried making a big thing where everyone in favor of the 14 team playoff, like, all right, they want they went like last year of the all MLB team, basically only like one player was in the playoffs. Like the Padres were one of two teams to go over the CBT last year. It was like the Dodgers and the Padres last season. You know, Padres didn't make the playoffs. They tried their best to buy
To be fair to them, though, like a couple of their pitchers got hurt too, so that and Tatis gets hurt. So, but again, things happen.
It doesn't guarantee anything.
No, and it happened. The Yankees always big spenders, and they're not always, you know, top notch teams either. So I get it, but I don't know. Not that I'm like agreeing with the ownership on that side, but I think the level the players are asking for could come down, and like maybe maybe we could figure something out. But I just think like the idea of the CBT is wrong. I think they just need to figure something else out. Like maybe make it like a percentage of revenue each year, kind of like a salary cap. Like make the CBT a percentage of the revenue from the previous season, and just lock it in that way every year. Because like we've seen the NFL salary cap go up and down, you know, with revenue and you know, with the COVID year, it went down the year after. So I don't know.
No, I mean, you can, we can end this because I know we don't want to stick on it forever, but I mean, the main thing is like, so few teams will go over the CBT. Ownership are basically, they're afraid of like the Mets and Steve Cohen and the Dodgers. They're afraid of a couple of teams. And the people that are holding this up are the cheap teams. There's not going to be a minimum. The problem isn't teams are spending too much money. It's that so many teams are spending too little money.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
It is a big problem in baseball.
Never getting fixed because it's something, again, it's vote. I mean, it's, I wish the players would understand this, that there are, I mean, Whit Merrifield actually came out and he said very nice things about his own owner. So they understand that it's not everybody, but there's a certain amount of owners that are going to prevent things from ever happening. So, you know, they had a private meeting today. Hopefully maybe they had a candid conversation like, listen, this and this are never happening. It only takes this many, you know, this many owners can hold us hostage over this and they're going to continue to do it. Yeah. So, you know, that's unfortunate, but that's the reality.
Yeah. But okay, so let's change this lockout talk over to fantasy baseball, right? So we obviously know we have a shortened season already. And there's going to be, like we said, we expect that to go a little bit longer, right? Than just the first two series, which is like essentially a week and a half. That's going to go longer. So when you are at if you've got a draft starting soon, right, or you're in the middle of one, how does this change your approach? Because, you know, we saw in 2020, and now granted that was a 60-game season, totally different ballgame. I don't think we're getting that far. But, you know, you did have to, you know, it's basically a sprint at that point, not the marathon. But, like, so we're getting maybe not the marathon, but a long run this year instead. So, like, how does it change a strategy?
It doesn't change it. It doesn't change it a ton. There's some people that really want to get on, like, all right, Ronald Acuna, he's going to have more time to recover. Therefore, he should be a top pick again, which, you know, I can get behind that. Although we don't get full updates, we don't know how he's coming along. He hasn't been playing in spring training games. He's still going to need to rehab to a degree. The other thing is, like, people are trying to say you can draft injured players because there's less of a chance of them getting injured, to which I say wrong.
Actually, there's more of a chance.
Injured players can get injured at any time. They can get injured on opening day as soon as they can get injured at the All-Star break. There's actually less games for them to overcome being injured. So actually, this is worse for injury-prone players. The only thing I would say, and we don't know when it's coming back, so we don't know the degree, is pitchers that are on like a pitch count, like Shane Baz. Right. We know that he's on the extreme limit. There's less games. It's obviously less of a worry. So maybe you can, if you were fading them a bit, you can bring them a little back up in your rankings. Overall, that'd be the only thing that I would be really doing, but nothing too intense as far as changing any strategy.
Yeah, I just mentioned that today, actually. Dave, who was watching, maybe still is, he was in TGFBI, which is the next topic we'll get to, was debating a couple pitchers, and one of them was – oh, what's his name from Philly?
Ranger Suarez?
Yeah, Ranger Suarez. And I was like, you know, one of the things you got to worry about with him, right, is innings limit, right? But maybe we don't need to this year.
Why not?
So, like, you know, that could be a huge plus for him. So that is something
Chris
to talk
Paddock
about.
From a few years ago, like, everybody knew he was going to be shut down, but it's like, okay, when now? Because now everyone's like,
that's interesting.
Yeah, and it's not even rookies. It's like Freddie Peralta last year. He broke out big time. He was still going to be somewhat limited going into this season because last year's been stretched out. Not that he was going to be on any kind of Baz level of restrictions, but then this really brings him. If you were apprehensive because of that, this, you know, maybe, you know, you have no reason to be if, you know, it's going to be delayed any further.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree.
All right, well, let's move it into the TGFBI talk then, Joe.
Yeah.
You can take this one off.
You can lead it since we're both in it, and unfortunately you missed out this year.
I did. I don't know what the hell I was doing.
You just didn't sign up. I don't know.
It's like
don't February. Sign up. You don't sign get in. It's like February. Scott Fish, man.
I was like, oh, I'll get a. It's March. What?
Wrong.
So
anyway,
I guess quickly for the people who don't know, you know, what exactly is the TGFBI? You know, what type of a league? And you know, as far as the draft goes, what pick do you have?
Oh, for me.
Yeah.
All right. So TGFBI is baseball industry wide league, meaning that all you have to do to be able to be in it is create content, podcast rights in order to get in, but you do have to apply.
Yes.
Yes. There is a caveat.
So there's like, I don't even
have to try.
There's like 25, 30 leagues. There's a bunch of them.
There's a lot.
And there's an overall component. So you're going to win your own league, which is 15 team, 5x5 roto. With standard like waivers and fab, you know, to get free agent players on your team, and you're looking to win your own league, and there's an overall component, like I said, so you're basically taking your performance versus the entire field. So, you know, are you creating pretty much the most optimal roster you can? And at the very end, there's an overall winner. I am in League One.
Look at you!
I got pick four, with. I was hoping I already knew pick four. I'm like, okay, I'm probably getting Bo Bichette because Jose Ramirez is probably not making to me, which would be probably my main target. And if Fernando Tatis made it to me, I was going to draft Bo Bichette instead because I am extremely risk averse first round. Yeah. And again, I
wouldn't like my second pick then. my overall, like the second pick overall.
Oh, is that who you took?
Yeah.
No, I don't mind
Turn
it.
Turn Tatis.
There's certainly nothing wrong with taking him. Look at what he did in a limited season. He could easily be the best player.
That's why I did it. I'm going for it all, man. If I get last place, I don't care. If I get first place, it's going to be because I drafted Tatis. So I'm gonna
it's be, more of a – there's no honest. Bad pick in the first round, so I just try to limit the amount of question marks if I can. So I did take Bo Bichette because Jose Ramirez was taken third. In my league, Fernando Tatis was actually taken first overall. Turner went second. So
– Turner instead, actually.
I love getting I don't necessarily want to start outfielder either if I don't have to, just because I like a lot of later ones. So I prefer to get an infielder. I took Bo Bichette. I actually started out my first like five rounds with what I call the Brew Jays. Because I only drafted Blue Jays.
I saw your tweet about that, actually. That's funny.
I started Bo Bichette, Teoscar Hernandez, Josh Hader, George Springer, Freddie Peralta. That was my first five. And I was considering like pushing for it to go forward. Like maybe I'd take Jordan Romano. I'd take
Alex Noah, later. Yeah.
But I just couldn't. So after that, I broke away from the strategy. So I already had a nice core of hitters in Bichette, Teoscar, and George Springer. And my pitching staff was Peralta and Hader. I got some my saves.
Solid,
I got
man.
Some lead and pretty much anything I wanted. After that, I took Jonathan India because he's kind of the last of a massive tier at second base. I want to make sure I got him. I love him a lot. Then I actually got to share Carlos Correa, which is my first one, period, ever. I don't think I've ever had a share of him in any league ever, mainly because for injury reasons. But he was going a little late. I'm not opposed to him, and I just get this feeling that because of the way the climate, the way it's going, there may not be like, I feel like the Yankees just might jump out and sign this guy. And if he's batting third for the Yankees, who knows? So it's
going to be massive.
And I took a shot there because he's going to be, you know, he's going to give you decent batting average, runs, RBIs, home runs, not stealing many bases. And I took Blake Snell, another guy that I don't typically go after. Again, I'm usually reverse. This guy has some injury history in his past, but last year, at the very end, the last couple of months, he stopped throwing his changeup, which is just a brutal pitch that some people, including Nick over Pitcher's List, have been kind of trying to lobby for him to drop for a long time, like years. And he did, and he was just like lights out, like 180.
Yeah, he was.
Stretch. So a little bit of risk here, but again, I have Peralta, I have Snell. I think either of those guys can be in the Cy Young hunt, so I like that. And they ended up getting Akil Badu. Why, you're either in or you're out.
Oh, I was so mad he didn't fall to me. He got drafted so early in my league, and I didn't expect it.
Like, people forget how little experience he had before being just tossed into the deep end last year. And he made some strides down the stretch to improve his plate discipline. So this is someone, not to push it over, everyone's looking like, who's the next Cedric Mullins? Which, by the way, it's Tyrone Taylor. Akil Badu is someone who I think there is certain risk here. But he is someone I think could take a step forward. Could be like a 25.
What round did you get him in?
Ninth.
Wow, you drafted him earlier than I would have got. He went in the 10th round in mine, which I thought was still early. Like, if you looked at the ADP, I was like, holy crap, he went like 40 picks early. And I thought he was going to come back to me at the end of the 10th, and he got picked 3 picks in front of me, and I was pissed.
Well, I took a Badu, and the entire chat room was like, oh, no. So I'm glad I took him because he was apparently not lasting longer.
Because everybody wants that speed power combo at that point, and he's one of the last guys.
It was a reach where I got him, but I wanted to make sure I took down power and speed. And he's a guy that I've done the research on, and I'm in. So I decided to grab him. And then we're only in the 10th round now. So my last pick was Sean Manaea, who – brutally underrated pitcher. You're only injury prone till you're not. He had a full healthy season. There's no reason to believe that he won't continue to be healthy. And there's a very good chance he is traded, likely traded to a much better situation to get himself maybe more run support. More, I mean, not that he was on a bad team, it could be a good situation for him because right now they're breaking that thing down and you don't want to be one of the stranded players left behind, especially if you're a starting pitcher. That's my team so far. My offense is Bichette, Teoscar Hernandez, George Springer, Jonathan India, Carlos Correa, Akil Badu, and my staff is Josh Hader, Freddy Peralta, Blake Snell, and Sean Manaea.
I like it. So I'll go quick with mine. So I had the second pick. I'm in league. I don't even know. I started out with Tatis, number two pick. I wanted Turner, hoping that Collette would take Tatis, but he's smart. Took Turner. So I took Tatis. Right, of course. We all know who he is. So very, very smart guy. Came back around, and I was shocked. And I forget who was sending out those tweets about like early on about like min and max picks for some of the early guys. I got the max pick for Walker Buehler, number 29 overall. How he fell to 29, I have literally no idea.
All right, so I'll say two things. One, he can't fault the pick, obviously. That's his max pick. I'm not in on Walker Buehler.
It's
terrible. It's like someone asks you, hey, what do you think of my team? And then you had even bad news.
No, that's fine. I mean,
his velocity has been steadily decreasing for some time. And it's just, I think he'll be good. I mean, I think he's gonna be a bust.
But at that point, you know, Cole, Burns, Wheeler, Woodruff, DeGrom, Scherzer, Hader, I took Hendricks on the next turn. I mean, the only other guys that possibly I would have taken in front of him, Sandy, Shane Bieber, Urias.
For me, I think, don't know. I think Joe Musgrove's going to have a better year than Walker Buehler.
And that's fine. I mean, I don't know. But
I'm not trying to bring you down. Yeah. I'm giving my opinion on
fine, I'm just going to drink the rest of the show. No, Jesus, man. God.
In my
I'm out.
No, in my league, he went 16th. You got him. You know, insanely late.
So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. Yeah. But your typical person listening to the show, you're probably not getting Walker Buehler that late.
No, you are not. No, absolutely not. So do not trust my draft results for this. But came back around and again, like I've learned my lesson, and a lot of chatter, like I said, on the Slack channels within the Fantasy Six Pack staff, and a lot of people convinced me to go closer, at least one closer early, if not two, especially in this format, NFBC. And you know, not that I want to overpay for guys, but I went and got Liam Hendricks. Guy locked down. I think he's got the role, no matter even if, you know, Kimbrel is still there for some reason. But that seems like it's not going to happen. But anyway, came back around, got Chris Sale. Took a risk with that one, but I feel like the upside there is just massive. Took a Randy Arozarena. I'm not a huge fan of his. I know he's not like elite in any category, but he doesn't hurt me anywhere, and especially batting average. I feel like I always go after guys in this. That's my problem in NFBC. I always go after like the big power guys, and they're like no average. So like he's got decent power. He's gonna get me steals, and he's gonna be a plus in batting average too. Anthony Rendon, I know injury risk, but I'm just hoping he comes back. Third base kind of slipped away from me, man. It was one of those, like, even Chris Bryant got drafted before I could get Anthony Rendon. Like, it was bad.
I got to say, again, no one knows everything. No, I know nothing. I mean, it's a totally random. But I'm just saying, because I don't want anyone watching who knows me, because they know my feelings on all these players. They're out there. I do player threads. Sure. I, like, literally wouldn't have drafted any of these players.
And I could see that in your face.
It's like a massive like, do not draft
every
list
name,
for me.
You're just like,
great.
Like, Randy Rose is safe for average. No, he's not.
Yes.
I mean, he was like.
His plate discipline is actually pretty brutal. I think he could. I think there's a path to him getting platooned.
Interesting. I don't know.
I mean, it's the Rays. So, I mean.
It is. I get it.
That is a big part of it. But, yeah, he does have yes, massive holes
in Tampa that you will eventually get platoon.
It wasn't an easy pick. I'm not going to lie. It was just kind of one of those, like, he was.
Sounds like you were all in.
I wasn't. I really wasn't. Came back around, took JD Martinez.
Take the chip.
Kind of a safe bet at that point.
JD Martinez. It's a great pick.
Safe bet there. Came back around. First base kind of just ran like all of a sudden. And then so Jared Walsh. I like him. He's not, you know, not one of the elite tiers.
There's some people that don't like his platoon splits, but even though he struggled a little versus lefties, his power was really there. So I don't think there's any kind of a risk there. I think
he's fine. Get back around and kind of reached a little bit on Pablo Lopez. I realized I did. This is kind of a guy I like. I was honestly like, we were at the dinner with my kids last night, and they were like super distracting. And I was kind of like, oh, Pablo Lopez, click, click. And I was like, what the hell did I just do? Because Sean Manea went like seven rounds pick later. Then I was like, damn it. Oh, I missed him on the list. It was one of those, like, I didn't have all my computer notes in front of me. Instead of, I had my cell phone and was like, I don't feel like making everybody wait 4 hours till I get home. So I just took Lopez. I like to strike out.
This is why we don't go out to dinner during draft time.
Exactly. anyway, then I took my next closer, Knebel. I finally got my second baseman, Muncy. Thankfully, he is second base eligible. I know the risk is there big time with the shoulder or the elbow. But, second base, people were taking their middle infielders already by the time I got to this point. It was crazy. Second base just, like, went super early, and I couldn't take anybody. It was bad. But I came back around and took Gene Segura. So, like, I like Segura. Adverse there with that one. And then lately just took Hunter Renfro, and I'm waiting for this pick to come back. So I don't know. It's an interesting draft. I'll be honest. I don't do very well in these formats. But I'm trying to balance it out. Like, I usually don't get the saves. I usually don't get the steals. And I feel like I've got at least that this year. And I've got a lot of power. And it's like the pitching risk with Lopez and Sale works out for me. I feel like this is a really solid team. There's a lot of risk with this team. I do know that. But
There is a risk.
I mean, there's a risk with every team. I look at everybody's team and I'm like,
the max Walker Buehler. So
hell yeah. I'm gonna put it on the wall over here. Hey,
I don't think Walker Buehler is like getting injured or anything. I don't like where he's being drafted in typical leagues. This is atypical where you got him.
Where I got him, it was fantastic. I would not have drafted him like early second where I thought he normally goes, but he fell to me the next to last pick in the second round, and I was like, yeah, okay, thanks.
I would probably be like okay with that.
So real quick, just to summarize, you know, how do you go into a deeper league like this? Take away the TGFBI and it's the industry and it's a free league and people do very wonky things on this, as we discussed before the show. But like in a typical, you know, NFBC 15 team draft, like what is your kind of typical strategy as you go into it?
You mean as opposed to like, you know, like the more standard like 10, 12 team leagues?
Yeah.
In the deeper ones, aside from the competition, it's just there's the player pool is going to be more bare. So I like to take a little less risk, not no risk, but I basically just want to maximize plate appearances and innings pitched is what you want. You want to go in there and make sure that, you know, you want to draft a team that, you know, is going to end up, you know, being in the top quarter of the league in plate appearances and innings pitched. It's basically you just want to make sure you're drafting people that'll be on the field, because at the end of the day, you won't be able to necessarily replace them with a quality player. They come up, they always do. Saves, especially in a waiver league, they always come up, but those are the kind of players that everyone's bidding for, so you're gonna have to pay big time, and that doesn't necessarily mean you'll get them. In a draft and hole league where there's no waivers, you obviously have to fill needs like saves and make sure you get people that have a job. Here you don't necessarily have to do that, but like you grab one closer early in Hendricks, I grab Hader. I think it's good to, you know, you want to walk away sure that you do have something, and you can always fill in later with some spec guys. You can drop them, you can try to pick up, but yeah, that's it's more of a personal preference of being more risk averse. I think getting people that are gonna be out there, because then that'll just kind of set you up the rest of the way. And I also typically draft like the death by 1,000 paper cuts. I always say, I don't want to have to draft Miles Straw. Don't have to draft Starling Marte. You don't have to. It's like, I would prefer to just like get a little bit of stolen bases with about everybody. And it doesn't mean everyone needs to steal like 25. You give me 10. You know, I mean, it's better than nothing. Even five is better than nothing. People don't realize when you see, sometimes people say five, I'm like, oh, he doesn't steal bases. Yes, he does. A zero is a zero. A five is a five. A five adds up. You'd be surprised at how many times people win leagues because of just a couple of stolen bases. Yeah. So yeah, I just like to just have a nice, just pretty much balanced team. Like I said, I went here. I have 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like I have 5 hitters, 4 pitchers. I mean, I kind of like to just balance kind of everything out.
So I'm not falling behind. That's the way I go too. I went a little pitcher heavy in the beginning, only because some of the pitchers, like my league, would sort of hitter heavy in the beginning.
Yeah. More so
than I thought. And so like some of the pitchers fell to me, and it's kind of like, well, okay. But then in the middle, when everybody else was going pitchers, I went hitters. I've sort of zigged when everybody else has zagged, not on purpose. It wasn't my plan. But this is kind of the way the whole draft has gone for me.
Never goes to plan, right?
No, definitely not. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you more so with the steals things, like just sort of dink and dunk, like just sort of just get little bits here and there. But I for some reason didn't do it with this draft. I usually do, and I guess it doesn't work out for me, so I decided to try something different this year. So, you know, I got Tatis, who hopefully is going to get me a good number, assuming he stays healthy. And then, again, Rosarena was sort of like, you know, he could be a 2025 guy, and that's a good base. And then I really kind of ignored steals for a little while until Segura, which is like 9, 10, 11, 12. At best, like
there's actually a good example of my league for what I'm talking about for the audience if they want to know what I mean by death.
Sure.
Drafting right behind me is Howard Bender, incredibly smart guy.
Yes. He
works with Fantasy Alarm. Everyone knows him.
Yep.
He has a solid team. I'll list it off. He has Juan Soto, Jacob DeGrom, Matt Olson, Randy Rosarena, Eloy Jimenez, Bobby Witt, Alec Manoah, Miles Straw, Pablo Lopez, Matt Chapman. Primary hitters because we don't know what to expect from Wade. You got Juan Soto, handful of steals, Randy Arozarena, Eloy Jimenez, and Miles Straw. The main thing there is when you take a couple of players that don't give you a ton, like Matt Chapman and Matt Olson and Eloy Jimenez, if Miles Straw were to get injured, you're kind of screwed. Again, this is the 10th yes. round. He has plenty of time to draft other players, and you can't count on anyone getting injured. The beauty of why I generally like to push, again, I said death by a thousand paper cuts. If you were to lose one player, you pick up another one off waivers. You haven't really lost anything in a category because no in particular player is carrying it. You don't have yes. an outfield Mondesi. You don't have anyone that's literally cripples your team by going down.
Right. And so I actually still feel like I've done that. Like I always avoid, and we say this every year on this show. I always avoid, and I know those guys are valuable. I always avoid the Starling Martes, you know, what was his name years ago? Played for the Royals, who was like supposed to be the big speed guy, and then like
Billy Hamilton.
Yeah, I mean, like supposed to be like 60 steals, but dude, he would do nothing else for you. But like, if you drafted him where you got him just for that, and he went down, which he did, you're toast. Yeah. So like, you can't do it.
He went a little later. I don't mind. I mean, I have some shares of Marte. It's definitely nothing you want to do and rely on it. It depends. Like he can go early second round. If he falls, I'll take a shot. And it doesn't really change my strategy though. He's going to give you a decent batting average. He's going to score some runs anyway.
He's not a total zero everywhere else. Like some of those guys, about.
Sometimes it's nice to have that cushion. If you have that guy early that you can take other guys, it opens up some doors to allow you to take some people that are not going to steal as many. But that's just a kind of a unique situation. It depends on how your draft's going. Like you're saying, you have a plan and then your draft probably changes your plan.
Yeah, no, yeah. It definitely does. But yeah, I don't like taking those guys that are almost like a negative in you know, 2-3 categories just to get the super plus in one, and you're Joey relying Gallo. On that. Yeah.
If it's not OBP, he's a net negative. The batting average is literally makes it not worth the home runs. People think, oh, he could have 50. It's not worth it. It's literally not.
So, but all right, let's jump into our shortstop preview, man. That's what we're here for tonight for the most part. We're 40 minutes in, but we can get through this. I promise. Later. Promise we'll get through this, guys.
It's your fault. You invited me on. You should have seen this coming.
It's okay. We like to talk sports, man. We're good. That's why we're here. Alrighty, so we will stop. We'll start off here with a guy that you kind of already alluded to, who I think I know what the answer is gonna be. Fernando Tatis, right? You know, he's obviously has fallen into the injury risk category with the shoulder. You obviously don't think he's the number one overall pick after what you said before.
I think he can be easily. It's just I think it's if you're playing in a lot of leagues and you could certainly take a shot. If you're a more casual player and you're only playing like one or two, and then he does injure his shoulder, And again, this isn't a fluke thing. He slid into a base. I mean, he injured it swinging twice.
Right.
So again, we saw what he did in limited at bats. He can easily, you draft him number one, he can easily win you a league. That's how good he is by himself almost, as long as the rest of your team's healthy and you draft it accordingly. If you're only doing a couple of teams, it's just tough for me. And it's just a matter of, you have those other options at the top. You have Jose Ramirez. You have Trey Turner. You have Bo Bichette, Juan Soto. Or I would just rather go another direction. Do I have no problem with anyone going there? It's personal preference to just – the other guys don't have the red flags that he does. He didn't have any surgery or anything to correct it. So, again, I'm not a doctor. This is and just like, hey, he had this problem. It wasn't fixed. It happened twice last year. I see no reason why it won't happen again and why it may not be worse. But this is, this is speculation only.
Yeah, I mean, what was there a huge risk taking him where I did in TGFBI? Absolutely. But I kind of was like, you know what? Kind of what you said. Like, if there's anybody in the first round at the top spot that's going to like propel you even a little bit more than the rest of the guys, he's it.
And yeah, plus, it's overall, like we said, you want to win the entire thing, not just your league.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, again, I don't care. Like, we get nothing for winning the league. We get nothing for winning the overall either, but you get a lot of notoriety for winning the overall, I suppose. But
I mean, again, no offense to any of the winning the individual leagues, but
it's impressive.
No one remembers. Literally, no one cares who wins these individual leagues. If you win the overall, people will remember. Clay Link won the first overall. Todd Zola won an overall. I mean, you know these people. Who won last? I don't know. You know who won my league last year?
I could not tell you.
I might have been Rob DiPietro, I think.
I don't know.
But yeah, no one cares. Go for the overall. No one cares who wins.
Early on, I had Tatis number one. I've moved on to Trey Turner being number one overall, which is something I never thought I would say. Like after the first few years of his career, where he was, you know, sort of injured himself constantly, he's sort of gotten away from that, and he's just been an elite player. Does he have the ceiling Tatis has? I'm not sure he does. I think we've seen that with Tatis, like, you know, 120 games, he almost outperformed everybody last year. It was crazy.
Tatis did outperform Turner.
Did he outperform everybody?
The thing with Turner is he's safer, and he is second and short eligible.
Right. That is huge.
For a player, his is elite, and it gives you that ability later in the draft to pivot depending on what's available. You can put him in either one. I mean, second base would obviously be most likely the way to go. But
Hope so, yes. But it doesn't always go that way.
If something goes wrong with your other second baseman or shortstop, you can move him around. So
absolutely.
I have Turner one as well. I have Jose Ramirez at two, which has, you know, it's interesting because obviously we already know Tatis just blows him out of the water,
right?
In terms of what he can do and what he has already done. Jose Ramirez is interesting because of what he does at third base. Third base is by far the worst category or the worst position. And he steals bases, which other than Mondesi, basically no one but Kia Brian Hayes really steals bases at third. So he's kind of a unicorn at a shallow position. So Jose Ramirez is kind of that, you know, it's not that he's better. It's that just like it's, you know,
The position scarcity goes a long way, especially that early on. I agree. I don't know. AJ, you got anything else before moving on?
No, I mean, I kind of fall into the same line with both of you guys. Like I do have some recency bias with injuries and let that play out. And for me, it's still playing out for Turner, unfortunately. So I don't really own Turner as much as I wish.
I had to do a double check on Turner because somebody actually told me that, like, he hasn't been injured as much. And I was like, wait, what? And I looked back and I was like,
it may have been
holy crap.
Because I was like, yeah, no, he's not anymore. And I was like,
why can I not figure
this out?
I mean, it happens in football too, right? We play a lot of football. I always get stuck on injury prone players. And then, like, oh, wait, the guy's actually been healthy the last few years.
I remember being on a podcast with someone. They're like, Jorge Soler, he's constantly injured. He literally can't even stay on the field. And I had to like ask him, how many games do you think he played last year? And this was like, you know, this was a while back before the 2019. I said he played 162. He played every game. He led the league in games.
Never around.
And like, so like last year, Starling Marte is always injured. Last in the 2020 season, he actually played 61 games. Because everyone played 60, he got traded, and he actually ended up playing one more game.
So that's hilarious.
People forget at times. But
you just get stuck early on that.
Tatis, I'm not trying to predict anything with him. I hope nothing more than for him to go completely crazy, go 50-50.
Hopefully you don't have the AJ jinx. Anytime he talks bad about a player, it is bad.
Like, I could just barely mention their name, you know, incorrectly, and then they get injured. I'm like, because usually I own them, so it mostly screws me and then everybody else who owns the players. But all right, well, moving on here. So after what I think was a pretty solid showing in only 70 games and 281 at bats, what are your expectations for Wander Franco? Assuming, you know, he plays basically the full 2022.
I love Franco. I think maybe 3 years he's considered the best hitter in baseball. He's in fantasy it's different though, because He may not give you the eye-popping numbers you're hoping for in terms of power and speed. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a very high success rate. The power, I think, will come around. But as far as this season, maybe 20 might be the most I'm hoping for. But one thing is, I think his batting average is incredibly safe. He never batted below like 315 in the minors, and he got to that point by the time the late summer rolled around.
313. In the minors, 318. He hit 313 that first year.
313. So I mean, it's like and he ended up like being the best plate discipline in the majors. After August, he had the least amount of strikeouts in the league.
Yeah.
I expect him this year, and he's one of those guys I did my 2022 player threads on. So anyone wants to go in my Twitter profile,
click
on the hashtag and read like in depth what I think. But I think that he's Xander Bogaerts this year. That's who I think. Yeah. I think he could be better, but I think they're slightly different. I think, Xander, like as far as power and speed, you swap them between the two players, but I think they're very, very close. So anyone thinking that Franco's being drafted too early, I'd say if you're in on Xander Bogaerts, you should be in on Wander Franco, because I think he's basically a cheaper version of him. But of course, there's track record to consider. So not to take anything from Xander, he's an amazing player too. But yeah, I think Wander is a rock solid. I think the ceiling isn't there this year. He's still growing into power, but I think the floor is very, very solid.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at 53 runs, 39 RBIs, to only 7 homers, 2 stolen bases. But again, the average sitting at 288. Sorry.
As a 21-year-old, by the way. Barely.
Yeah.
He was 20 last year.
Pretty solid. And he only had a 311 BABIP. So, I definitely like Franco this year. I'm hoping that I can get some shares of him on some rosters. And just hopefully just watching it, watching him continue to grow and blossom. If I'm looking at him this year, I'm not looking at him to be the Fernando Tatis savior of a team. I know that's not what I'm getting right now, but what I'm getting is somebody that's going to help me overall.
Really modest with his power and speed. Give him only 15 home runs and 10 stolen bases. This guy can still hit 300 and go 100-100 in runs and RBIs, being third for the Rays. So again, kind of the way from Francisco Lindor, it was always considered really great for years. It wasn't that he was a juggernaut in any particular category. He just kind of was good across the board. And Wander Franco could be something like that, a much better version at some point. But again, not as much power, not as much speed right now. But yeah, love him. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to get a quick follow up there. You agree with – so on ADP for NFBC right now, he is 52. So that's like end of the third round for Franco.
See, that's the thing with roster construction.
And I know it's 15 team leagues. He has an ADP of 9 in one league. That's a little
silly. I'm not drafting Franco in most leagues. I'm not drafting Bogaerts either.
No, I'm not either.
I would much rather there's Jorge Polanco later, Dansby Swanson, Willy Adames. Yes. There's actually some later versions.
Yeah, I like Adames.
If I'm not getting Turner or Bichette or Tim Anderson, I'm probably waiting, to be honest, at shortstop. There's a few guys I like later. So it's just an area like an opportunity cost thing. There's other pieces I'd much rather draft where Franco is going. I'm not saying he can't return value where he's going, but there's other players going around there in other positions I'd rather go.
That's the answer I wanted. Thank you. Yeah. So you mentioned Francisco Lindor, and this guy for a few years, man, was an absolute stud. I mean, 30 bus bombs, 15, 20 plus steals. And then the bottom just fell out, man. What happened here? I mean, I know, and of course everybody expected a little bit of a bounce back last year. Everybody gives a pass for the 2020 season, right? And then he gets traded to the Mets, or signs with the Mets or whatever it was, and you expect fine, he'll be back. It was awful last year. I feel like he was decent, and I gotta look at the splits, but I feel like he was decent like the last month maybe, but it to save a little faith, But yeah, 9 home runs in September. So that saved a little face for him. But it was a pretty miserable season. If you drafted him at cost last year, you paid for it. And yeah, so I did. do we expect him to bounce back to form, you know, now that he's, you know, gotten another season, you know, maybe getting used to New York a little more? I don't know. Like, what do we do? What do we do with him?
No, we've seen a lot of a short answer to start off this, for, you know, spoiler alert. Yes, I expect him to bounce back, not to his career best, because I think that kind of like Blake Snell's career year, it was a little over his head metrically. But something going back to like his around his 2018 was it season?
That was his career year. Yeah, sorry. There was 2017, he was 33-15. 2018, he was 38-25. That's home run steals. And then 2019, he was 32-22.
Yeah, I mean, there you
three
go.
Straight years of like pretty monster production.
2019, yeah. I think, is not totally out of the question, because he pretty much had a lot of you look at a lot of the bad luck metrics, or like batting average for balls in play and home run for fly ball, they were way off his career norms. If they just return to like typical career norms, then he bounces back in a massive way anyway. And that's just tinkering with nothing else. The thing that's encouraging with him is that his plate discipline, which has pretty much always been one of his strong suit, was completely intact. He was still like not really, you know, he had some decent contact. He wasn't chasing bad pitches. His hard contact actually improved. You mentioned the second half. Huge kind of a serve that showed some promise. I think that he got here, signed, and went to New York, signed a massive contract, had the weight of the world on him, and he didn't come out of the gate real hot. And he was, I think, just, you know, really putting extra pressure on himself and just pressing a little too hard. I mean, it happens before. Mike Piazza was not good. He got booed when he got traded to the Mets. He re-signed with them anyway, and then he went on to, you know, obviously be a Hall of Famer. He was already on that track when they got him. But, he was really aggressive. So even though the plate discipline was everything, he was just being a little too hyped up at the plate. I don't think the high BABIP skills he had eroded as far as like line drives and everything. He's getting a little older. The speed is still there. He's still young enough. And the contact rate declined a little bit. But again, I think that's because he was being overly aggressive and not waiting out for his pitch. So there's a ton of variables here. But overall, I think that this is something that we saw at the end of the season. You just need little tiny things to just – little metrics to go back just to his career norm. I think that he can bat around like 260, 265. He can get to those 30 home runs. He can get to like 18 steals. So kind of like a shorter version of that 2019, I think he can get, and he'll be batting right at the top of the lineup. So you're talking about maybe 100 runs, like, you know, 95 to 100 runs. He could be getting anywhere between 80 and 90 RBIs too. So I'm expecting a full bounce back and everything that, everything in his profile suggests that's entirely possible, because everything that kind of made him is still there. He actually improved last year, like I said, in the power department. So there's the happy fum ball. Francisco Lindor is not coming back, or he's going to be hitting like 35, 40 bombs or anything.
I was going to say, like, is there any part of that, like, where you think he can't return because that was the –
unless they're juicing the ball back up. I mean, I have him down for 30 home runs. I would put him anywhere between like, you know, like 20, 27 and 32 in that kind of general range. And the speed will definitely be there. I think 15 to 20 stolen bases is there as well. So, yeah, I like Lindor quite a bit to bounce back.
Yeah. I mean, some of the other, you know, advanced stats I'm looking at, you know, with his base running, he's still been consistent. Again, this is kind of knocking 2020 out of it. You know, his run scoring percentage is still right in line with those really good years where he was an all-star of 16, 17, 18, 19. You know, his stolen base percentage basically right in line there too. It's a little lower, but he's had a couple of those years where he's just peaked and come back down and peaked and come back down. So it's all still there. You know, and you had mentioned the BABIP. I mean, it was low last year.
Everything lines really up. Low. Being just uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I said his contact percentage and swing strike percentage, he suffered for him. The metrics he put up in 2021 were actually still better than league average. They're good for anyone else. They're bad for him. And his in-zone contact is always 90% every year of his career before 2021, except for 2020 when it was 89.9. So, again, it's this everything
How
that
dare I you?
It just looks like a guy who was pressing because he signed a massive contract.
Right.
He was uncomfortable with the plate. He started slow. It compounded the whole thing with the thumbs down. Then he got injured and he was out a while. And then he got on track at the end. He had that monster like 3-home run game versus the Yankees. Everything here points to a big bounce back year. There's actually not much. I mean, again, you can read the thread. I wrote a giant one on him as well. But yeah, everything points to this merely being a guy who was uncomfortable playing in New York, and he'll probably be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And he also missed some games last year, too, which he hadn't in years past, not to this extent, at least.
So his ADP, sorry to cut you off, AJ.
Yeah.
His ADP is 46 on NBC. Like you're fine with that? Or are you willing to, or is he another one of those guys where, like, you'd rather take, you know, I'm just looking at the guys behind him right now, Paul Goldschmidt, JT Realmuto, Riley.
I like where he's going. He's not a guy I put on my list and I'm like, all right, I'm taking him. I want him here. Those first few rounds for some players, like the first three or four rounds, it kind of depends on where your draft slot is, because for the most part, there's a script. Not that you should go by ADP, but for the most part, people go in general in a certain order. You're not getting Lindor at the, you know, if you're drafting at the 101, you're probably not getting Lindor. You're probably getting Lindor if you have picks in a 15 team league, you're getting him, like, if you're like 11 to 15 in a 12 team league, you're getting him right there, you know, at the end as well. So it all depends on that too, and it depends on who you took for your first couple of picks, whether, you know, the power and speed always fits in. Did you already take a shortstop? Did you go hitter? Do you need to take a pitcher there? So it depends on a lot
right.
of things. Yeah.
No, of course it does. I'm just is what I'm saying. And anybody can see, like, if you go look at the ranges for the NFBC, you know, or any ADP, if you go look at the ranges of them, like even for Lindor, right, it's 21 and 75. That means somebody who knew they weren't going to get it and they wanted him and knew they weren't going to get him on the way back took him super early because they had to.
That seems a little aggressive.
That is, but I mean,
his average ADP, I think, is completely fair. That's where he should be going.
Yep. Yeah. His late is holy cow. His late is I just lost him. I had him highlighted. 75. Whew.
I'm willing to bet that was some kind of isolated incident. I bet his second max is probably like.
Like Paul Goldschmidt, his maxes is 103. What? Holy cow! Okay. Some of these maxes are insane.
It is weird they'd have an entire group together where they
Class A is 163, and we need to do a whole show on this. This is insane. Like, guys, what is going on here? All right,
draft is different.
Let's move on to the next question, AJ.
All right, so next guy we got here is Mr. Jazz Chisholm Jr. I mean, are you buying his 21 production line that we saw? You know, you're talking 124 games, 464 bats, 70 runs, 20 doubles, almost 20 homers at 18, 53 ribbies, 23 stolen bases. So the average was a little lower, 246. Are you liking him, or is it that the overall lacking talent in Miami is enough to keep you pushing him away?
It wouldn't matter the team he was on. I don't think this is a year to invest, especially at ADP anyway. I think what he did is legitimate. The power and speed are obviously a big part of his game, but the thing with him is, like so many other players of this ilk, are very brutal plate discipline, kind of like Mondesi, kind of like Javier Baez. Baez has overcome that, but he is the exception to the rule.
Yes.
Usually it does not work out for you if you have poor plate discipline, poor contact skills. Look at Keston Hira. That is more likely what happens to a player when you cannot figure it out. This year, everyone is drafting him as if there's this massive step up coming, or there's some people that are like, all right, well, I think he's going to give me power and speed, and even if he struggles, he'll still return value. That's probably the most likely way he'll return value to you, because I don't think a step up is coming. I think a step back is coming. The league is going to adjust to him. He struggled mightily at swinging pitches above the strike zone. I mention this when I talk about him all the time. When they bring up Jazz Chisholm, everyone always wants to show that home run he hit off Jacob DeGrom, which everyone wants to highlight as a plus, but it's just a massive negative. Yeah. He strikes out on most of those. Like, he hit that home run and it was majestic, but he strikes out more often than on those high fastballs, like everyone does, and he swings at them constantly. And I expect opposing pitchers to take advantage of that. This year is more of a growth year for him. If I had him in like a dynasty league, I'd just be hoping for some incremental growth. See him struggle, see him get better. And at the end of the year, hopefully he's maybe tied up a few things. We'll have something to look into for the next year. Maybe we'll see. Maybe he ends the year on a high note, or it all collapses. But for where he is going, yeah, absolutely not. I see no reason to take him at cost at all. No, thank you.
So you like guys like Seager and Polanco, and I'm looking at the shortstops right behind him. Yeah, even Bobby Witt, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know what to do with him right now. Carlos Correa, those are guys that are going, within a round and a half behind him.
And we mentioned opportunity cost earlier with some guys. He's going early enough where I'd much rather go another direction entirely. You know, get a pitcher, get another position, and yeah, just wait and grab a shortstop later. It's a bad area. Again, I don't want Baez. He went to Detroit. I don't know if we're going to talk about him. Baez, that's a terrible spot for him.
Yeah, we almost did.
It's like it's a bad zone for shortstops, really. It's Corey Seager I don't necessarily want.
I really want one before that group. And if I don't, I want one way after that group, I feel like. Like, I'll be fine with, like, Chris Taylor just filling a hole. it's weird. Like, and Wiley Adams, like Willie Adams, whatever. He's a guy who I think, you know, he's going super late. I was gonna bring up later, but spoiler alert. Went there, but there's some guys later that could be fine, and you're not having to pay up for what you think the upside of Chisholm could be, which I agree with you, man. I'm not sure it's quite there.
There's a possibility he could get sent down, and I'm not saying I think that'll happen, but again, Keston Hira, the plate discipline is that fragile. I don't think it will happen, but I think that there is some mad struggles coming.
My rankings have him all the way down to 112, and his ADP is up at 77, so something's not matching up there. And I'll tell you, my rankings only do for one catcher leagues, not two catcher leagues, and NFBC is two catcher leagues, which means you've got some catchers above him that my rankings normally wouldn't. So that means there should even be a little more drop down for him. So yeah, I'm off him this year, like at cost. Like, if he falls to me in like the 15th round, fine, but he won't.
He's a guy who doesn't necessarily fall too often.
No, I'm trying to think of where he went in. He was one of those that went right after I took a Rosarina, which I know you don't like, but
Chisholm
went the next pick after me. So we both kind of did the same thing. It was hilarious. Me and the team after me, we both took Tatis Ramirez, closer, starter. Then we both took starters. Then we both took, like, kind of upside-y, like, power steel guys, which you didn't like at all.
Do you have a bot in this league?
maximizing
your same strategy.
In my league, TGFBI, he went. Jazz went the fifth round.
That was fifth round, early fifth.
I'm gonna list you the amount of players I would take instead of him that went after him. I'm just gonna name them. in mm-hmm. order they were taken.
Oh, I could go for maybe a round and a half. Do we want to do this?
Jose Altuve, Max Fried, Dylan Cease, Brandon Lau, Kenley Jansen, Kevin Gausman, Jose Berríos, Joe Musgrove, Corey Seager. I would have more than him. I don't want him. Trevor Rogers, Jorge Polanco, Brian Reynolds, Jonathan India, Frankie Montas. I would not take Cody Bellinger. I would take Will. I guess I wouldn't go too far. But yeah, I would be pushing minimum to the seventh before I'd be kind of considering it. And I still would probably be going another direction.
Yeah, I mean, you think about where I've got him ranked, right? It's about 15. That's middle seven round for me. That's where I've got him, and that's in a one catcher league. So you know a few of those catchers are getting boosted up in front of him, but that's pretty spot on. So, all right, next guy here, Dansby Swanson, a guy you brought up a little bit earlier, and man, like, I feel like his ADP might be a little low at 119, right? I mean, like, he had a very productive season, and he's just, I mean, ADP of 119. What gives?
I don't know. I mean, look at the year he had. I'm trying to get up his exact stat line right now. He batted 248, but with 27 home runs, 78 runs, 88 RBIs, 9 stolen bases. His ADP is actually higher than last year. After doing in 2020, he batted, he had 10 home runs and 5 stolen bases here. He had 27 home runs, 9 stolen bases, 88 RBIs. His ERA or his ADP rose.
I guess maybe the batting average? Like, I mean, his batting average dropped to 248, so that's not good, but his BABIP was pretty low. So I expect that to get, you know.
I mean, 248.
Correct.
Anyway, you hear.
It's not killing you anymore, but I don't know.
Everyone, close your eyes in the audience. 248. And everyone's like, oh, that sounds bad because I said 240. Let's move it up 2 points. 250. Hey, everyone smiles.
I'm in. I mean,
which is what he did 2 years ago, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's going to bat like 250. He's going to hit 25 to 30 home runs, steal you 10 bases. Oh, my God. He's such a great value.
He's phenomenal. I was so mad I missed on him.
I can deal with that average, you know.
Hey, not to mention, last year it was like one of the lowest, at least for the first half, it was like one of the lowest league batting averages of all time. The league average was like 225.
It like constantly drops. For the last like 5 years, it's dropped. So yeah, batting average sucks. Don't worry about it. Ball
for a whole year, I mean,
just don't draft Joey Gallo. You'll be fine.
But the very end of my shortstop tiers that I'm happy to start is Swanson and Adamas.
Yes.
I like them way over guys, a couple of guys in front of them, but yeah, it's beautiful. More often than not, I'll probably grab another elite shortstop early, maybe in the first couple of rounds. Again, like, I love Bichette. I love Tim Anderson. If I can get them on my team, I will. And I'll get these guys from my middle infield because I love filling my infield.
I was hoping Swanson or Adamas was going to fall back to me in 8, and they got snagged like 4 picks in front of me, and it is what it is. But that's what I was hoping for. Just didn't work. I had Swanson last year in Razz Ball, and that was gold because he was dirt cheap. People gave me crap for that pick, and I was like, Swanson's fine. Like, what's wrong with Swanson? I guess he's boring. I don't know. I don't understand.
I think he is.
Who doesn't like his hair? Like, come on.
That's weird.
Beautiful hair. Let's just do it.
Stop it.
No, okay.
I mean, he was such a like hyped prospect too coming out, and you know, he had some ups and downs, but then he's come around. Like, he's coming into his own here. And
hey, people overhype number one overall prospects sometimes, or just general prospects. Yeah. If you drafted a guy, even number one overall as a shortstop, and you're like, hey, he's going to bat 250, hit near 30 home runs, steal you 10 bags, and play great defense. Everyone would accept that.
Yeah. They're like, yeah. That's what we want on our team.
It took him some time, but yeah.
You mean you don't have to be – yeah, you don't have to be Cal Ripken?
What are you talking about? Here's something. This is how late Dansby Swanson's going. I'll tell you – I'm going to give you a little bit of trivia, guys. Again, Swanson, we know where he's going in drafts. I'm going to give you a projection from the Bat X, which is by Derek Hardy. It's considered to be the most accurate projection for hitters. This hitter is projected to bat 257 with 31 home runs, 88 RBIs, and 10 stolen bases. What do we just decide that Dansby Swanson is going to be around 250 maybe? Maybe near like 27 home runs, near 10 stolen bases, and I think dead on 80 RBI. So it's basically what Dansby Swanson was last year. A little bump in batting average, right? About 9 points in batting average. Who do you think that is?
So you said so 250, 31, and 10?
257, 31, 88 RBIs, 10 stolen bases.
Lindor.
Bat X.
No, I don't think it's Lindor. It's got to be somebody pretty high up.
Yeah, this guy's projected to be Dansby Swanson.
Yeah, right. I'll go with Whit. No, the wrong way. Crap, I can't even think of anybody. Teoscar Hernandez.
This is Marcus Semien. Going from Dunedin and Buffalo and Toronto down to the friendly confines of Texas, where he will be surrounded by not an all-star cast in a cavernous park for a pole hitter.
Not so much.
He had 45 home runs last year. Again, Bat X very good at what they do. Project Marcus Semien going sometimes in the second or third round, sometimes fourth, but most often third round.
That's interesting.
Is projected to be Dansby Swanson.
Pretty awesome.
Again, this is not, you can think other things of Marcus Semien. You'd be like, oh, he's going to do better than that. We're not talking about that. We're just saying that a place that is incredibly accurate at projecting hitters thinks that Marcus Semien is going to be the 2021 version of Dansby Swanson. And that's Marcus Semien. So, I mean, you know, this is just a plus.
Yeah, everybody's drafting.
That's how you spend draft capital, right?
By the way, don't draft Marcus Semien.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. All right, last question, AJ.
All right, last one we got here.
Well, yeah, for players, at least. I got one more bonus question.
Yeah, you got one after that. So I threw this one in because obviously we were talking about lockout. Trevor Story is one of the guys who hasn't signed yet. I would think that he could likely be on his way out of Coors Field. And they picked up Brendan Rodgers. Maybe the next year or 2 years after they had Story. But everybody's like, why would you do this? He's cock blocked by Story. I mean, he had a pretty decent season last year.
24-20.
Yeah. So what are your expectations for Rodgers, assuming he ends up being the Rockies' full-time shortstop this year?
He has I don't know.
Obviously, he's a later reach.
Yeah. A lot of people are hyped on him. I like him and McMahon. I would prefer McMahon. The thing with Rodgers is like, yeah, he did last year. He ended up batting .284, 15 home runs over only 415 plate appearances. So if you extrapolate that out, that's pretty solid. The thing is, he's never stealing a base. I don't think he's attempted one in 4 years or 3 years or something. So, I mean, literally, when I say zero in speed, I see projections for one and two. Believe me, it's zero. He's not stealing any bases. But he's not really giving a whole much else, and his barrel rate is like mid, like single digits, 6.2 last year. The .284 batting average, expected .251, slugging .470, expected .412. I think he hit above his head, which is going to happen in Coors Field. So, I mean, you can't take this all away from him. Expected stats are always higher for Coors hitters. But I think he actually he had middling power, which I expect to regress, and he doesn't steal. So I think that like I liked him at a certain point, but he kept crawling up and up ADP because I think people were kind of like on him a little bit. When all in all, I mean, his weighted runs created plus, which is just a metric, not for fantasy. This is just for grading out how valuable someone is on an offense, was an even 100, making him league average, which is, I think, is kind of what he is. So for fantasy, I kind of would rather wait because here's an example. I mean, he hit .284 with 15 home runs over 415 plate appearances. This guy right here is going to be probably leading off for the Washington Nationals. Last year, he hit 21 home runs, 84 runs. Cesar Hernandez. You can get him, and he's projected hit like .262 by the bat, 15 home runs, 3 stolen bases. Nothing great, but significantly later than a guy like Brendan Rodgers. So it's just one of those things where I think his ADP is just a little above his head. So I'm not really interested. I'm not like dismissing him entirely. I'm just not really like that excited about what he can do.
Yeah. And again, three stolen bases, way better than zero attempts at stolen bases.
Yes.
Hey, so, Cesar Hernandez at one point was stealing like 20.
He was when he was in Philly. He was always rounding bases. So
yeah, in Cleveland, he stopped. So maybe now that he's out of Cleveland.
Yeah. They might be like, oh, yeah, we forgot. You're good at this too.
Like, why? How do you go from stealing 15 to 20 to zero? It's bananas.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, he's a decent pick. He's just someone I just pulled out that in shallow formats is probably not even drafted. If you don't pull for Rodgers, is definitely like a last resort type hitter for me.
All right, so you talk about guys going late. So that was my last question here. So like, if you miss on those first top tiers of shortstops, and I guess, everybody's got their different tiers, but I don't know. Obviously, not Tatis, Turner, Bichette, Anderson, Bogarts, past Mondesi and Chisholm and Swanson even. I'm going to go past Adams just because I feel like everybody's going to say him if I don't. Let's go past him. Who is your like one or two guys that like if you just get drafted, everybody gets sucked in, which believe me, it's happened to all of us in any one position. It's happened, right?
And you wait, and then you're like, all right, I missed my guy here. I'm gonna pass, and I'm gonna get this next year, and all of a sudden you get sniped, and you're left with nothing.
Especially when you're on like the turn, and like you're just like, oh well, this guy's definitely coming back to me. Doesn't happen. So when you just get like stuck in no man's land, who are these late round guys that you're like, okay, these are the guys I want to get if I have to, or even for like your middle infield or like a utility slot.
When you get past that, like the last resort, right past that is Ahmed Rosario, who's not getting enough respect because of track record. This guy is incredibly young still. I mean, I think it would shock people to know because it feels like he's been around forever. He's still only 26 years old.
5 years.
And he comes in with like expected batting averages around like, the 287, 282 mark. The last couple of times he played full for the Mets and the Guardians. Last year, 282, 11 home runs, 13 stolen bases, and 588 plate appearances. And that was with struggling mightily in the first half. He came alive in the second half. He was actually one of the best hitters in baseball. And he did that with the Mets, too. He had big second halves. And again, only 26 years old. If he can somehow put it all together, you could be looking at someone that can inch up towards 300. He's that good, and he's going to give you some power and speed. So I love Ahmed Rosario. Gene Segura would be another one. He is like, old man Segura. He doesn't get a ton of credit because he doesn't steal bases quite the way he used to. I mean, he used to steal like, 44 one year, but he usually was in like, the 25, 30, and then he sunk down to the 20 range. And then he had a little bit of a back issue, and that slowed him down. Last year, though, still 290, batted 290 with 14 home runs, 9 stolen bases. I expect him to give you that solid batting average, little power and little speed. Which
took him in TGFBI.
Great guy to have as your middle infield. If worst case scenario, 100%. You got to wheel him out there as your starter. It's not the worst thing in the world. He's definitely a good target to have no matter what. But I love Rosario and Segura. Definitely your best parachute picks if all else has failed.
What about just a question here? What do you think about guys like O'Neill Cruz, prospect type guy, really not a lot of hype, not a lot of playing time yet. Like, is he somebody that you would take a chance on?
It's funny. I should have brought him this up earlier. I think that he's going to struggle the same as Jazz. I think they're going to be similar, but Cruz is going significantly later. Cruz is not guaranteed to be in the opening day lineup. It's the Pirates. They can finish in last with or without him. But in the off chance that he does, I think that, he has all the tools to kind of rival what Jazz is going to do. Right now, he's actually still going a little earlier than I'd like. He is being drafted based on one batted ball event. He actually struggled really badly. He came up only in 9 plate appearances, didn't walk, struck out in 44% of them, but he hit one ball 119 miles per hour. You give people an idea of how amazing.
He is an amazing talent, but it can be. Just might not get all the way there yet.
One problem with him, too, again, 23 years old. Before they promoted him, He had 273 plate appearances in Double A. They promoted him to Triple A before the majors. Only 29 plate appearances, and then they gave him the cup of coffee in the majors. So
not good luck.
not a lot of advanced work in Triple A, but again, in 29 plate appearances there, 5 home runs, and he actually did manage to walk 27% of the time there. So he did crush it. He, though, is 6'7", everybody. He is tall. Oof. When he gets up to the major leagues, I can only imagine the amount of things people are going to be able to do to take advantage of that height. When he, you know, he's going to have this long
sliders away. It's going to be bad.
Like a maniac. In a fab league, don't do it in draft and hold where there's no escape. But in a fab or a waiver league, you can take a shot at the end of your draft if he's available. See how it goes.
Wait, round 14 TGPI for me. And, maybe he's getting drafted early.
Yeah. It's early for what, you know, could be a guy who's in the minors for a long time. But in case he breaks camp, he could be amazing. Again, sometimes people just, you know, break out in the majors. But he's very exciting, but it's not the way I would go. I don't like drafting rookies early. Most of them struggle. Just look at Jared Kelenic. He was can't miss, by the way. There's no such thing as can't miss.
Yeah. Trout wasn't can't miss. You got to remember, he sucked his first.
If you want to take time up, if anyone wants to take a shot on a player, really wants to take a shot on a rookie, how about Riley Green? Again, he's not a shortstop. He's an outfielder. Yeah. Detroit Tigers. He's probably going to start there opening day. In 2021, last year, started in Double A, 16 home runs and 12 stolen bases, batted .298 before moving up to Triple A to end the year. 185 plate appearances there, batted .308, 8 home runs, 4 stolen bases. K rate below 30%, walk rate above 10%, 11% and 11.9. So if he can kind of bring that to the majors, the strikeouts will be a little high in his rookie year. But if he can bring the walks with him and the power and speed, he's going quite late, much later than Cruz, I think. But Green has a much clearer path to playing time, and he is definitely a guy that's worth rostering because, again, I don't think he'll struggle as much, and I think he'll actually play.
Last guy I want to ask you about, Andrés Giménez, and I know he's second base shortstop eligible. So he's a guy who struggled last year. A lot of people hype for, but is there any hope for this guy to like be the, you know, at least moderate power but speed guy that we all hope he's going to be?
Yeah, he stole 38 bases in the minors in 2018, 2019, 28, and then he came up and he did very well for the Mets in the shortened 2020 season before they shipped him off to Cleveland. Last year, he struggled mightily in the majors. And they shipped him down to the minors, which, you know, had a lot to do with they could have prevented, you know, they could have stopped his clock as well. But he went down to AAA, batted .287, .502 slugging, 10 home runs, 8 stolen bases. And he should be in the lineup every day now, rebuilding Guardians. They're probably going to trade Jose Ramirez at some point. So no expectations. But last year he was being way overdrafted. This year, I don't know if he's being underdrafted, but he's certainly someone you could take a shot on. He should be in the lineup every day. I don't know if he has a chance to bat towards the top of the lineup like people were hoping. Miles Straw is kind of cemented there. And then Ahmed Rosario, if he's hitting well, will be up there too. But it's a possibility he can work his way up there if Rosario struggles. But he should be in there every day as a power and speed guy. So not a bad target to have, especially in a waiver league where you can cut him if it doesn't go your way because – he's just like I don't want to say post hype because there was never that much hype, but again,
there was last year at some point.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, hype is in terms of, realistic prospect status. I mean, he's a
glove. Fantasy. It was like, oh man, he's going to get me 40 steals. And it was like,
exactly. I mean, he's he's known for his glove. He's a phenomenal fielder, which should keep him in the lineup, which is good. But I think he can give you modest power and some decent speed. Mm-hmm. I think he's a good target. Because, again, you get him late enough where if it doesn't work out, you can cut him.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. AJ, you got anybody else to ask about? Or
nah, man. I'm good.
I know we went a little long, but it's cool. We kind of knew the short. There's a couple positions that go long. We know shortstop's one of them. Shortstop is loaded, so we gotta go that way. But before we close out here, Matt, we want to let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter, on the internet, and what you got going on this season, man.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Williams, MATTWI77IMS. My DMs are always open. If you ever want to talk about baseball or anything, you go through any of my work and you want to know something about an advanced metric or something maybe you want to know more about or don't understand, or you can always reach out to me privately. I'm happy to talk you through it. I host the Turn 2 podcast. I'll be going weekly whenever the season does start. Short morning episodes to kind of go through trends of different lineup placements, or if pitchers are changing their arsenals, different, things that you have to know to set your lineups for the week or the day. I'm going to start doing little shows like that, but I always have my weekly one on Wednesday. And also, if you want to read my written work, NBC Sports Edge, my column every Tuesday, By the Numbers is always there. So that's pretty much where you can all find my stuff.
Awesome.
Great. Glad to have you on again. It's always a pleasure. Yeah, enjoy the night, and hopefully we can enjoy a season soon. All right, man. Thanks for coming on. Have a good night. Peace.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, AJ. So I think that's pretty much it. But next week we're going to just continue on and just rip through the rest of these. We're bringing on Eric Cross from Fantrax, going through the outfield. So that'll be a good one as well. So that's all I've got for the night. Again, hit those subscribe buttons, those like buttons, those follow buttons, whatever it is. Leave those reviews. And that's all I got. We appreciate you guys listening. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks.